You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The World Cup with William Hill.
The Punt Daily Podcast. Listen at news.williamhill.com, on Audioboom, or subscribe by iTunes or your preferred podcast provider.
Hello and welcome along to the Daily World Cup podcast here at William Hill. We're moving on to Thursday's action over in Russia, and we've got some big games coming up in Group C and D. We've got two matches in Group C, Denmark against Australia, France against Peru there as well. And in Group D, it's Argentina against Croatia. The two big guns in that group go head-to-head. We'll be hearing from Alex Dunn and Dave Kellner throughout this podcast. They've looked ahead to all three matches taking place on Thursday. And first up, we have Denmark taking on Australia. Denmark, of course, got off to a winning start, whereas Australia were beaten by France. An interesting game to look forward to at 1 p.m. on Thursday UK time. And here are the thoughts of Alex and Dave.
Let's talk about Denmark versus Australia. The Danes are odds on to win this game 8-11. The draw 5-2, Australia 17-5. Enhanced odds on the William Hill website, and don't forget about hashtag your odds as well. If there's a bet that you want priced up, tweet using that hashtag your odds to at William Hill, and the traders will endeavour to price your bet up. Denmark come into this on the back of that 1-0 winning their first game in Group C against Peru. Yusuf Poulsen with the only goal of that game, and France beat Australia 2-1 in what was a pretty low quality encounter, and I thought it was a disappointing performance from France. But we're not talking about France, we're talking about Denmark and Australia, and Denmark winning that game 1-0. What did you make to that match? Impressed, not impressed? I mean, your man who we talked about pre-tournament, yeah, Christian Eriksen, you were framing a lot of bets around Christian Eriksen and the master assister.
Yeah.
Master assisted.
He did. And he played okay. He's still the fulcrum of everything that they do. They're not the most classy team in the competition. But I'm glad they beat Peru. Peru are already doing my head in. They're the Iceland of...
Peru were so much better than Denmark in that match. They were, honestly.
They made a lot of noise because their fans filled the stadium, and they played for 15 minutes with a lot of pace, and it was good to watch. And then they got a bit tired, missed a penalty. Come on, I'm not having it. I'm not. There was one quality player on the pitch. He got the assist, and I'd back him to score this time.
Oh no!
I said beforehand that I think that they'll get a penalty against Australia. Australia, who have already conceded one penalty against France, I think they'll do so again. Christian Eriksen is 11-5 any time. I don't want to go on about him for too long because I just do it all the time. But I think he will score. Now, you mentioned Yusuf Poulsen.
Yes.
And I've got an angle in here. He was good for the Danes in that he's huge. He's playing right wing. So he's the secondary striker, if you like. So goal kicks are aimed at him.
Yep.
And my angle in is that the Aussie left-back, who's Aziz Beach, easy for me to say, who scored the own goal in the end, that was Pogba's goal, but wasn't Pogba's goal, that went down as an own goal. Now, he's tiny. Now, this sounds really simple, but I'll back a tall player against a short player any time of day.
In the air.
Yeah. All Denmark have to do is get a cross in from the left, and you're looking like you've got a chance. Add to that the fact that Poulsen was also a threat from open play, and he's still in there for set pieces, but from open play, of course, he scored on the floor, if you like. I think that there'll be a lot of goals in this. Denmark weren't superb in the first game, but I think that they could open Australia up here. Australia were committed against France.
They lack any quality. I mentioned this in the when we were talking about the first set of group matches. There was an Australian journalist that was very damning in his verdict of the quality of the team, the squad that they've sent over to Russia, and he expected them to get peppered by France. That didn't quite materialise, but again, I think we saw they had a lack of class in that squad.
Yeah. One player I do like, by the way, is Lecky for Australia, who just grafts, but you can't really bet on that, can you? This is sort of a over 50 working hard points. Good work. Not really. No, I'm not. There is a good for Australia bet, though, and I will say that much. And I would back it alongside. So far, I've put Eriksen and Poulsen up as anytime goal scorers. I'd add to that Jedinak, 11-2. Threat from set pieces for corners, but the main gist is penalties.
Yeah.
And there have been so many penalties in the competition so far. 11-2 is too big for a penalty taker, full stop, quite simply. So I'd probably go with a three-pronged attack. Eriksen, Yusuf Poulsen, and Jedinak. Anytime goal scorers. I think there'll be plenty of goals, but rather than backing overs, I'm just going to take those three players.
The World Cup with William Hill.
We're live for every second of the tournament with in-place stats, best bets, and updates from our World Cup reporters. Listen and bet at williamhill.com or on the app.
The World Cup on InPlay Radio.
Well, let's speak to Matt Dickinson, the chief sports writer of The Times, who's over in Russia for the World Cup. Matt, how are you? You well?
I'm very well, yes, thank you. Yeah, just in the sunshine of Repino, where England are based, so can't have any complaints.
Let's talk about England first of all before we get on to Russia, the team and the nation. The big news coming out of Team England at the moment, I guess, is Dele Alli's slight thigh strain and the team racing inflatable unicorns in the hotel pool. Seems to be having a thoroughly good time.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, they were able to do that with a bit of fun and a bit of smile on their face. And that's what a win does. You know, a lot of teams, we've seen big nations struggle to get off the mark in this tournament. Germany losing, you know, Brazil, Argentina. So, yeah, to have got that win, I just think changes the whole mood. It meant England could travel back and have a rest day, have a sort of warm down day yesterday with, say, a bit of unicorn racing, bit of fun. They've got a sort of family day today, and you know they can go about those things with a bit of a, you know, confidence, knowing that, you know, they move on with that crucial victory. And obviously, Dele Alli's injury is the one downer on it.
I know a lot's been made of the kind of the positivity and the pre-tournament atmosphere amongst the England team. Have you noticed something genuinely different, Matt, from previous tournaments you've covered?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is my sixth World Cup, and certainly I think it all comes from leadership. I think, you know, they've really, Gareth Southgate, you know, combined with a lot of sort of background work at St George's Park, there is an attempt, certainly, to breed a sort of different type of player and a different type of atmosphere. I think, you know, we are hung up on the past a lot in English football for reasons we all know about. And I think there's just been a real attempt to somehow bring a part of the reason why they, you know, it's partly because of the talent's out there, but also I think there's been a deliberate philosophy of going with these younger players. I think they've sort of somehow tried to sort of cleanse the mentality a bit and not be hung up on the past. And I think Gareth himself, everyone knows that he's a sort of decent guy, mature guy, eminently sort of sensible guy. And I think there's, say, so far it's worked, an attempt at a sort of openness from him and among the players. Now, obviously, you know, you start losing games, that becomes more of a challenge. But so far, they've managed to sort of keep that sense of balance. We've seen the football, and we've seen it in the football. There was an attempt to express themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and you know and delve into the kind of that whole argument about how the media is to blame for the negativity. But again, there seems to be a more positive outlook. How do you think? What had you written, or what had your colleagues written before that Kane winner had gone in? Would it have been a slightly different take on the match, or was it largely the same?
No, it's a good point and a good question. I mean, to be honest, I was sitting there actually really wrestling with it and struggling with it because obviously, you know, 1-1 would have been disappointing and frustrating. But I didn't want to sort of, you know, go back, same old England, because it didn't feel like that, certainly not in the first 30 minutes. You know, they should have been 3-up, and they should have been 3-up playing some really bright football, exactly the football that Southgate had promised. Good movement, good running, you know, trying to be intelligent on the ball. So, yeah, it clearly would have been, you know, a significant tone of disappointment, but an attempt, I think, to take those positives out of it that there were.
Level on points then with Belgium, of course, after the first game. Belgium sticking three past Panama in their game. England's next opponents are Panama. Have you sensed, maybe with the Ali injury, there may be some changes there, but have you sensed any other changes afoot for the Panama game?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's an understandable big debate about Sterling, Rashford, and you know, there is no getting away from the lack of goals that are from players around Harry Kane. I flagged it up after the Nigeria match in preparation. The fact is that you know, two goals in 39 from Sterling is a startling statistic from a guy who obviously has the talent to contribute more. You know, Dele Alli's goal record with England hasn't scored for a couple of years for England. Lingard has got one and obviously missed, you know, a couple of really, really good chances early on against Tunisia. So there is an issue there. I think Southgate will stick with Sterling. I understand why. You know, I think he thinks his movement is good. I think they think that if he keeps, you know, making the runs that he is, the goals will come. I have to say, looking at the one he missed, I do think it probably is an issue in the mind. I think there is a reluctance to pull the trigger playing for England. I think there is a little sort of niggle in his head about that. But be interesting to see the work. They've got this finishing coach, Alan Russell, who is, you know, that's his prime job, is to get these guys, you know, finishing for their country as they do for their clubs. So, yeah, be interesting to see the sort of work he's doing on the training ground to try and get those goals that, because obviously England, you know, Harry Kane is prolific. He keeps being prolific, but there's going to be a time when others have to chip in.
Mm. The favourite in terms of picking a correct score is 2-0 to England around the 7-2 mark. We've got some kind of special bets around a healthy England win. England to win 3-0, 3-1 or 3-2 is 100-30. Harry Kane to score two or more was 5-2, now 7-2. I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in that. This Panama team, they're no great shakes, to be fair. You know, you look back at the 0-0 draw against Northern Ireland in preparation for this competition. There's not a lot of goals in their team. Is this a golden opportunity for England to build on what they got out of that first match and really go and express themselves a little more and get some goals?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we saw, equally, we did see from the Belgian game that, you know, it can take a bit of patience to break them down. I mean, and they can defend pretty robustly. And I think that, you know, I think it's a good challenge for England in that, you know, we saw it the second half against Tunisia when Tunisia basically retreated into their own box. And we huffed and puffed a bit. And, you know, that does raise these questions about just that little bit of ingenuity and creativity. I personally don't expect it to be, you know, hugely simple just because, you know, back to that issue of, you know, we're not sort of free scoring. I think that's the next bit to come under Gareth Southgate that needs to come, is that he's set up a system that the players are comfortable with. There's a patience about them. But we've still got to work on you know, being a bit more ruthless, a bit more devastating with the finishing, and that's not something that you can just click your fingers on.
If I had to push you for a prediction on the game, what would you go for, mate?
I think it might just be a 2-0, you know, and I wouldn't be disappointed about that, provided we play the sort of football we showed in the first 30 minutes. But I say I don't think that's necessarily going to be easy if Panama, you know, play deep right from the start.
Harry Kane to score and England to win 2-0 is 15-2, which isn't a bad price. Has anything changed in your mind as to how far you think England will get, Matt, in the
well,
competition?
Well, obviously, we've plotted this morning in the Times that the possibility of coming second in the group suddenly potentially could open up all sorts of interesting route forward. I think we have to stick with where we're at, which is a belief that we'll beat Panama. We are, you know, underdogs against Belgium when you simply look at the talent on the pitch. You know, I would have us probably for where we were, which is reaching a quarter final. But you know, I'm more interested in some ways in just seeing if we can keep playing as we did in the first 30 minutes against Tunisia and start to put that together over longer periods.
All the prices available on England's odds. If you just go to the World Cup Centre on williamhill.com or on the app and just click on teams and then select England, all the bets on where they'll finish, top goal scorer, etc., etc., are available there. Let's just have a quick chat about Russia, Matt. The football team, first of all. Brilliant. You know, you always want to see the hosts do well, and the fact that they've piled in so many goals in the first two games is, it must be great for the tournament as a whole, and it surprised quite a lot of people as well. I mean, we know that, you know, obviously the first opponents were limited. Egypt are a better team than that, and they put them to the sword as well.
Yeah, I have to say, genuinely shocked. I mean, I spoke to I had to do a piece before the tournament and spoke to a sort of guy who's a Russian expert, and he talked about the shambles that they were. I mean, he said that they'd lost half their defenders, that, you know, they were rustling sort of, you know, players that had retired out because they needed them, and that they, he simply couldn't see, you know, genuine risk that they wouldn't get out of the group. So, you know, to see them get off to a flyer, sticking all these goals in, as you say, it is, I mean, it's great for the interest around the tournament, that sort of buzz. I mean, clearly there's, you know, issues around, generally around Russia, Russian sports, that are, shall we say, troubling. I think it's certainly created a buzz around this tournament.
And just tell us about your experience of being in the country itself. Obviously, there were, you know, there were a lot of people were reticent to even go to Russia, and, you know, there was some scare stories, they usually are, ahead of major sporting occasions. What's it been like? What's the welcome been like from, you know, just ordinary Russian people, and kind of the welcome that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, really good. I mean, we tend to, I mean, it does seem to be a cycle, as you say. We get the scare stories, and then you actually turn up, and because it's a, you know, same as it would be in England, it feels like a sort of country on its sort of best behaviour, in the sense that, you know, you go into restaurants and they're, you know, keen to see foreign visitors, you know, to welcome them and to get their money. You know, there is a lot of businesses that are benefiting from it here, and people just, you know, you as it would be in England, you get suddenly crews of Peruvians walking around and people say, oh, you know, what are you doing here and how'd you get here? You know, you suddenly find yourself falling into conversations with Swedes you bump into airport, or, you know, Argentinians, and that is part of the joy of being at a World Cup. We were in Volgograd and there were England fans who spent fortunes, you know, getting there, because that's what they do. They followed England all their lives, and wherever it is, whatever it takes, and that is one of the joys of being at a World Cup. It is suddenly this melting pot. There's a street in St. Petersburg where, you know, you suddenly have, you know, Brazilians talking to Argentinians, talking to Danes. You know, that's part of the whole joy of it.
Well, let's hope those England fans and yourself and your colleagues from the Football Writers Association are in Russia for a while yet, following England around. Thanks for your time, Matt.
No problem. Good to speak to you.
Matt Dickinson, the chief sports writer from The Times, there at Dickinson Times on Twitter, if you don't already follow Matt. Check out all the odds on the William Hill website, williamhill.com. We've got enhanced odds, there's flash odds available, there's bet boosts on every single game of the World Cup.
Welcome to Peru, where the highest sand dune in the world exists, 3,860 feet from base to summit. There are over 3,000 varieties of potato and 55 types of corn in this nation. Guinea pigs are a delicacy in Peru. They're served crispy, complete with the head, legs, and eyes. And the world's longest river, the Amazon, starts in the Peruvian Andes near Machu Picchu.
A little bit about Peru there, then. I think those little country files are my favourite part of this podcast. And we move on now to the second game, where France take on Peru. And once again, Alex Dunn and Dave Kellner giving us their thoughts on the match.
France versus Peru next. 1-2 for France. The draw 17-5, Peru 5-1. As always, a full range of betting markets for you to check out on the William Hill website and on the William Hill app as well. Don't forget about your World Cup bet boost, which you can use on any market, on any game throughout the World Cup, and Scratch of the Day available online as well. Now, France, they won their opening game 2-1 against Australia, as we just mentioned a few moments ago, and Peru were beaten by a goal to nil by Denmark. I mentioned pre-tournament that I was very intrigued to see how Paul Pogba would play in this France setup, and just like he has done throughout the course of a season for Manchester United, he drops too deep, gets into positions where he can't really influence the game, and is more interested in playing one 60-yard Hollywood pass than actually influencing the game in the right areas. And that was evident, I thought, in that encounter against Australia. Dropped into that almost centre-half position to pick up the ball, and they were fortunate to win France. I'm unsure as to whether they are a unit or a team of individuals.
I could not back France to win this tournament off the back of that first game. Nobody could. If you have already backed them, you're thinking, oh, God, something's got to change here, because they weren't good at all. They basically had a really negative side out all the way through the team, apart from the three strikers. And you could almost see that Didier Deschamps' plan was, right, well, it's OK, because these three strikers are young and fast and exuberant and creative, so they can just do their thing, and that'll be enough to get us to win. But Australia defended well, and they couldn't get through. You mentioned Pogba. You wouldn't have known, watching that game, who cost, however much Pogba cost, 90-odd million.
Yeah.
And who was the other one, which is Aaron Moy.
Yeah.
He was great in that game. No, I'm with you. Pogba can be really effective, but you just want him to step it up. Now, I think that France will make changes for this game. One of the biggest issues for me was that Australia squeezed tight, and the fullbacks had the opportunity to go forward. And you had Hernandez on one side, who was more bothered about rolling around on the floor, and Pavard on the other side, who Matt Lawrenson really didn't like. Like, to the point where you're thinking, Benjamin, what have you done? What have you done to Matt Lawrenson? Because he hated him.
But he's still on his half-time kick catch junkie or something like that.
He was not good. And he's just too negative. In that system, you want your fullbacks bombing on.
So what do you expect Didier Deschamps to do? Will it be a change tactically or a change in terms of personnel?
I think fitness-wise, you've got to see if Sidibe's ready. If he is, then I'm sure he'll come in. Pavard defensively, by the way, I've got no qualms with. But going forward, he looked so at sea against Australia.
There weren't really any success, even though they won that game 2-1. There weren't any success stories, were there, for the French?
There was one.
Go on.
Olivier Giroud.
Okay.
Came on, and they just looked so much better with him in the side. They looked like they had a focal point of their attack, which obviously he is. They looked a bit more balanced. When you've got Griezmann, Dembele and Mbappe up front, they all just do their own thing.
Yeah.
And if they all come off at the same time, if it all comes off at the same time, great, looks fantastic. But if it doesn't, it looks like it did on Saturday, which was clunky.
They've gone in with no cohesive plan.
And it's just sort of a, right, you run there, I'll run there and see where we end up. With Giroud, at least, it's right, there's a constant. I'll stand there, you know I'm going to be in the box. And he's a good player. So I'd wait on team news, but he would be the focal point of any bet here. I'd back him to score first. Anytime he's 11 to 10, which is fine. If I was Antoine Griezmann, I'd be a little concerned, because he was the one who made way for... Well, he and Dembele came off for Fekir and Giroud, and it was Mbappe that stayed on. I'd back them both anytime, to be honest. I think they can both score in this game. But Giroud in particular, against a Peru defence that are OK, but I think Giroud in the air will certainly have the beating of them. He would be the main bet for me here, provided he starts. It is an if. It's not a definite that he will start. Other bets that I like in this, I'd be backing overs on cards. I think Peru will get stuck into the French. I think the French will look to try and play around the Peruvians, who, if they start with the intensity they did against Denmark, they have got half a squeak of getting something here. But I'm not being bowled over by this loving with the Peruvians at all. They are energetic, yes, but energy doesn't count for anything, you know?
I actually fancy Peru to win this game. I think 5-1 is too big. We've managed to get deep into this preview without mentioning the one... We briefly touched on it in the last preview, but that penalty miss... That's got to be one of the worst penalties of all time, hasn't it, Christian Cueva?
It was Johnny Wilkinson-esque.
It was, and he was inconsolable at half-time and after the match. I was kind of surprised he came back out for the second half, to be honest.
No, you can't do that.
He was that upset, though. I just thought that he might have been put out of his misery, so to speak.
Christ. You've got a unique style of management, Dave, I'll give you that. Get off the pitch. And actually, while you're there, crikey. I agree, it was an awful penalty. I felt quite sorry for him, but I also backed the Danes, so I didn't feel that sorry for him at all. I actually cheered when it went over. No, I'm not buying the Peru loving. Sorry, Peru fans. Sorry, hipsters everywhere.
Don't play with that much width either, Peru. I can't see many corners in this game.
No, that's true.
They were quite narrow in that match.
If France's fullbacks play as they did in the previous game, then I don't think we'll see him in
there. So, what are the bets here then?
Provided he starts Giroud first.
Yeah.
Giroud any time as well. And again, provided he starts Griezmann any time, 11 to 10. I think if you back them both at 11 to 10, level stakes, the worst case scenario is you make a small profit.
Yeah.
Best case scenario, I think one of them scores.
I'm going with Peru to win this game. I think 5 to 1. I think France are going to end up being one of those nations you look back on in the future and think, why were everyone getting so excited about France? They're a team without any real cohesion, and I think that their tournament might end shambolically.
And don't forget, you can tune into the podcast on a daily basis to hear more value losers from Dave Kelder.
BetBoost is available on every World Cup game on williamhill.com and the app. So whether you're backing Argentina to win, Messi to score, or an enhanced odds special, make the price bigger by clicking or touching the black and yellow boost button on your bet slip.
Now we go back to Alex and Dave, looking ahead to what could be a pretty interesting game in Group D as Argentina take on Croatia. Could be tight, couldn't it?
Now this is a match I'm looking forward to immensely. Argentina versus Croatia. This should be a cracker. Argentina, just a shade of odds against at 21-20. The draw 11-5 with Croatia in the betting at 29-10. One of the biggest disappointments of the opening group of matches in Group D was Argentina drawing with Iceland. One apiece. A match where you expected Argentina to dominate possession. They did. You expected Argentina to be able to break down Iceland at will. They weren't able to. They were a little bit toothless, Argentina. Iceland defended with 11 men behind the ball, as anticipated, and Argentina couldn't find a way through. And most of their efforts were quite speculative in that second half as well.
Yeah, I got lured in by Argentina, and I'm not having the fact that Iceland are a good footballing side, because they're not, but
yeah, because you've already clipped out some of my stuff from the previous podcast to mock mercilessly. I'm not going to do that to you, Alex, but
good.
You expected Argentina to win that game and win it comprehensively.
No, I did. I got lured in, and it won't be happening again, because they are so, so reliant on Messi. Aguero's a fantastic player. They've got great players all over that side. But it's his presence that is almost detrimental to the Argentine side. And this sounds ludicrous, because I am one of his biggest fans, and I think he's incredible. But when he drops deep, they give him the ball. And he might have two men on him, but they give him the ball. Well, if you actually missed him out, you'd have half a chance of trying to go past him, and then you've got, hang on, Aguero's got loads of room, or Di Maria's got loads of room. I think it would work. Thing is, I thought he was pretty good against Iceland, truth be told. Yes, he was dropping deep, he was getting the ball, he was trying to do what he could. I thought he had a quietly effective game. Just didn't get the end product. The missed penalty aside, he's bad at penalties. Shouldn't be taking them.
Yeah, he's bad at penalties.
He really shouldn't.
I think he's missed 20 odd in his career now.
Yeah, I think 25 from 80 something. It's not a great strike rate.
No, it's not a good strike rate.
So I'm going to return to a bet that I put up in the previous round for Croatia. Now, the logic for me putting tall players up for Croatia against Nigeria is because Nigeria can't defend set pieces. Okay. Now, that was justified, although we made no money from it. Because the first goal came from an own goal in the end, and the second goal came from a foul from a corner that led to a penalty. You couldn't have backed Luka Modric if you were backing corners.
You look at the stats for that game as well. There were 25 shots on goal in that game between Croatia and Nigeria, but only four on target.
Yeah, it wasn't high on quality,
no.
I said. Now, Argentina don't do much wrong defensively, I suppose. So it's a bit odd that I've returned to the same players that I'm going to side with again. But they're just too big, and this sounds almost very basic, but the Argentine side are very small. And if you've got a side that can actually get some set pieces against them, Iceland troubled them with a few long throw-ins, and Iceland are quite good from set pieces. And by the way, back Iceland players, defenders, to score against Nigeria in the other game. Because Nigeria still can't defend set pieces. But for...
Who do you think wins this game?
I think probably a draw.
Yeah, 11-5. I don't feel confident about Argentina after that first.
I'd back Croatia or the draw. I'd take Argentina on at 21-20 anyway. But in terms of the anytime prices, Lovren was up for all the set pieces and was lively enough. 20-1 is too big. I don't want to say disrespectfully big, but he'll have one chance in the game. At 20-1, that's fine.
Yeah.
And the other one's Mandzukic, 5-2, focal point of attacks, threat from set pieces. You look at who he's against, Otamendi. Good defender, as he's proved for Man City this season. Not the biggest. Left back, Tagliafico, not the biggest. Rojo, not the biggest. Mm. Then you're thinking, right, okay, well, maybe they've got some big strikers to come back and help out defensively. No chance. Aguero, Messi. They're a small side, Argentina.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they're going to get bullied, but I think any half-decent delivery in the box, which Modric's delivery against Nigeria actually wasn't that good, but I think they could have more goals from corners for Croatia. So Lovren at 20-1, Mandzukic 5-2 anytime. They'd be my two plays in what I hope is an entertaining game.
So there you go then. That's Thursday's edition of the Daily World Cup podcast here at William Hill. Thank you very much for joining us. And do rejoin us again tomorrow, where we'll be looking ahead to the three games taking place on Friday. You can, of course, get in touch and get some your odds on the matches as well. Hashtag your odds to at William Hill if you fancy anything in particular. And enjoy the action on Thursday at the World Cup.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.